Welcome to SCOTUScast, a project of the Federalist Society for Law and Public Policy Studies. Our contributors join us from around the country to bring you expert commentary on U.S. Supreme Court cases as they are argued and decisions are issued. The Federalist Society takes no position on particular legal or public policy issues. All expressions of opinion are those of the speaker.
Thank you for joining us for this post-decision episode of SCOTUScast, Immoral or Scandalous Trademarks in the First Amendment Edition. I'm your host, Grace Gotchling. On June 24th, 2019, the Supreme Court decided a Iancu v. Brunetti, a case considering whether a provision of the Lanham Act prohibiting the registration of immoral or scandalous trademarks infringes on the First Amendment. Business owner Eric Brunetti applied to register his clothing brand's trademark, FUCT, but was refused by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office because the Lanham Act prohibits registration of marks that consist of or comprise immoral or scandalous matter. The PTO Trademark Trial and Appeal Board deemed the mark vulgar and indicated that it carried a negative sexual connotation and in association with Brunetti's website's imagery and products conveyed misogyny, depravity, and violence. Brunetti then appealed to the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit, which held that the Lanham Act's prohibition violated the First Amendment. The Supreme Court then granted certiorari to address the lower court's invalidation of the federal statute. By a vote of 6-3, the Supreme Court upheld the judgment of the Federal Circuit. In an opinion delivered by Justice Kagan, the court held that the Lanham Act prohibition on the registration of immoral or scandalous trademarks constitutes viewpoint discrimination that infringes the First Amendment. Justice Kagan's majority opinion was joined by Justices Thomas, Ginsburg, Alito, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh. Justice Alito filed a concurring opinion. Justice Breyer and Chief Justice Roberts filed opinions concurring in part and dissenting in part. Justice Sotomayor filed an opinion concurring in part and dissenting in part, in which Justice Breyer joined. To discuss the case, we have Thomas Berry, attorney at the Pacific Legal Foundation.
I think I'll start in describing what this case is about by going back 2 years, because this case is very, very closely connected to a Supreme Court case called Mittal versus Tam that concerned the same clause of the Lanham Act. So the Lanham Act is the federal trademark registration statute that was passed all the way back in 1905. Since 1905, there's been a clause on the books that describes what sorts of reasons the Patent and Trademark Office can have for denying a trademark. And most of them are pretty standard, what you'd expect reasons to be for denying a trademark. For example, it's misleading. It gives people the false impression that some good is connected to some other company that which it's not connected to, or connected to a country that it's not connected to. But there's one specific part of that clause that has suddenly got a ton of attention more than 100 years after it was originally passed. And I think it's worth giving the full version of that, because particular parts of it have been litigated so much in isolation that you rarely actually hear what it sounds like all in a row. And it's a very interesting sort of grab bag collection of words that are pretty broad. And the breadth of those words is actually what turned out to be determinative of the case we're talking about today, even though most people didn't expect it to be. So what it says is that one reason the Trademark Office can deny federal registration for a trademark is if it consists or comprises a moral, deceptive, or scandalous matter, or matter which may disparage or falsely suggest a connection with persons living or dead, institutions, beliefs, or national symbols, or bring them into contempt or disrepute. And so for decades, that was just applied without any real consideration of whether there was a First Amendment issue. But over the 20th century, First Amendment doctrine got broader. Courts started looking not just at your quintessential bans on speech, but the doctrine started to take note that punishing people or putting people at a disadvantage for their speech or their ideas is really just as bad as outright banning speech. And that's when people started to wonder, are some of these essentially punishing people who want to register trademarks for what they're saying, for the ideas that they're saying? And the word that got the most attention to start with is the part that says you can't register a trademark that disparages persons living or dead or those other categories. And that led to litigation 2 years ago over an all-Asian American rock band called The Slants. They were sort of a punk rock band. They wanted to, as they put it, reclaim a slur that is often used against Asian Americans, referring to their slant eyes. And they wanted to turn it into a point of pride in ways that other racial groups have taken slurs and turned them into terms of endearment and terms of pride. And when their attempt to register the trademark on their name was denied, they appealed all the way to the Supreme Court, and they won in a case called Mittal versus Tam. And the Supreme Court said that this denial of their trademark was a viewpoint-based denial, that if you have a rule that you can't register something that disparages people, you're essentially saying that trademarks which express negative viewpoints or which people take to express negative viewpoints are disfavored, whereas trademarks that say positive things about groups are favored. And that's quintessential viewpoint discrimination. And it was an 8-justice court at the time. It was after Justice Scalia passed away and before Justice Gorsuch was confirmed. The 8 justices split evenly into 2 opinions of 4 each. And it's interesting to see what some of the justices, but not all of them, were willing to say. So 4 of the justices said that a trademark is not equivalent to a government subsidy. And they outright rejected that argument, which was one of the government's arguments. And they said, look, the key difference here is that government subsidies come from what you could call limited amounts of money. So a program, the quintessential case is a federal arts program. There was a Supreme Court case about that. And what the Supreme Court said there is, look, if the government has a limited amount of money to fund some artists and not others, yes, they can draw some lines. They can at the very least draw content-based lines, although it's less clear whether they could draw viewpoint-based lines. So 4 justices outright said trademark is nothing like that. In fact, it costs more money to litigate a denial than it would to grant a trademark. And in fact, when people apply to register a trademark, they pay fees to the government, so it's really a net positive for the government's coffers. Whereas 4 other justices, in a plurality opinion by Justice Kennedy, said, we're not going to decide that issue. We're just going to say that this is viewpoint discriminatory and leave it at that. Even if it were a subsidy or a limited public forum, which was the other argument, and that's the quintessential limited public forums might be a school or a bus ad, perhaps, where the government can, to some extent, restrict what's on there in the same way that a private company that ran a school or a bus could reasonably restrict what's said on that land. That 4 justice plurality just said, we're going to say this is viewpoint and leave it at that. And so that's what teed up the topic of this particular case. And what this case is about is an attempted trademark registration of a clothing brand where, if you just look at it, it's the letters F-U-C-T, which obviously, if you pronounce that phonetically, sounds like the past tense of a naughty word, although the somewhat tongue-in-cheek Eric Brunetti, the founder of it, says, no, you just pronounce it as an acronym, F-U-C-T, for friends you can't trust. But in either event, the trademark office denied registration to that term under the 2 other words in that long paragraph I read, immoral and scandalous. Now, interestingly, they're not back-to-back, even though many people, I think, have the assumption that they are because they are so often treated as equivalent. It says immoral, deceptive, or scandalous matter. But for essentially a century, the PTO treated immoral and scandalous as synonyms and denied things on saying that they were both. As the case law developed, not at the Supreme Court level, it had never reached the Supreme Court level, but at the level of the Federal Circuit, which is the Court of Appeals that handles all trademark appeals, they essentially slowly narrowed down the meaning of immoral and scandalous to something analogous to obscenity and also profanity. So not just obscenity in the sense of pornography, Supreme Court's parlance, but things one level below profanity, things that the government can't outright ban, but they said it's all right if the government at least chooses not to register these trademarks. And so once the trademark examiner found that F-U-C-T was a profanity, that was enough to deny it. After TAM was decided, this case went back to the Federal Circuit, and they said, in light of the reasoning of TAM, the immoral and scandalous part of the Lanham Act has to fall as well. But interestingly, they used a different reasoning than what they had used in TAM. They didn't go so far as to decide whether it was viewpoint discrimination. They said even if it is just content-based discrimination, it falls. And that's a very important distinction in First Amendment law. And essentially the difference is that viewpoint discrimination is where some law or some rule says, I like Asian Americans is acceptable. Saying I don't like Asian Americans is unacceptable. Content-based would be something more like you're not allowed to discuss race, or you're not allowed to have a bus ad that discusses abortion. It's a rule that, at least on its face, doesn't distinguish based on what your opinion is. It simply says some topics are going to be off limits. And Supreme Court doctrine is in flux. First Amendment doctrine is in flux about how to treat these content-based distinctions. In general, those also rise to the level of strict scrutiny, which means bans are usually going to get struck down, but there's a lot more exceptions to that, which makes it muddier. So, for example, at least currently, if something is purely commercial speech, meaning proposing a transaction, then content-based distinctions face a lower level of scrutiny. But the Federal Circuit said, look, even if all this does is ban registering profanity, and even if that's just a content-based distinction, we're going to say that this gets struck down anyway under strict scrutiny. And they once again rejected the arguments that it's either a subsidy or government speech or anything else that could potentially get around that. So it went up to the Supreme Court, as cases normally do when part of a federal statute is struck down. And during oral argument is the first time ever where Justice Kagan really changed the trajectory of this case and really challenged everyone's assumptions about what this case was about. The plaintiff, Eric Brunetti, essentially accepted the conventional wisdom that immoral or scandalous is a synonym for profanity and fought the case on that assumption. The government, they simply brushed over the possibility that immoral or scandalous could reach further than just profanity. But then Justice Kagan, at oral argument, took a step back and said, well, you know, she famously said, we're all textualists now. And she says, what are we supposed to be doing here? Are we supposed to be looking at the statutory words? Are we supposed to be looking at the standard that the Federal Circuit has given to explain those words? Or are we supposed to just be looking at the commitments that the Trademark Office has made as to what they're going to be doing for going forward, that they're only going to apply it to profanity? And she went on to say, look, immoral means on its face against popular morality. And that sounds like viewpoint discrimination to her. And it didn't help matters that if you look at the actual decision-making process in the Trademark Office, a lot of the denials they made really did look like they were viewpoint-based, even if they claimed they were only basing it on mode of expression, so only focusing on profanity. If you look at even Eric Brunetti's trademark application itself and the reason it was denied, the examining attorney did a Google image search of FUCT and noted that he found his mark was used in advertising that had strong and often explicit sexual imagery that objectifies women and offers degrading examples of extreme misogyny with themes of nihilism, antisocial imagery, and dozens of examples of other images lacking in taste. And when you listen to that, that also kind of sounds like it's viewpoint-based, that part of the reason it was denied was nihilism, antisocial viewpoint. And a lot of people didn't know what to make of what Kagan had said, because for 100 years, we just sort of assumed that really all this did was extend to profanity. And based on the rest of oral argument, a lot of commenters thought that this was going to go the other way, that unlike Mittal versus Tam, the court was going to find that profanity does not express a viewpoint. It's simply an intensifier. And on that basis, it's essentially not that important to expression, and that perhaps the government would have compelling enough justification to discourage the use of profanity in the public square by not registering trademarks. So the opinion comes down, and Justice Kagan does in fact write the majority opinion, joined in full by six other justices, and they're essentially going to reject the statutory interpretation that the Federal Circuit had used for about 100 years and actually just go back and look at the statute afresh. This is the first time the Supreme Court has looked at the statute. And if you simply look at the dictionary definitions of immoral and of scandalous, they clearly are viewpoint-based. And no amount of assurances on the part of an agency that they're going to narrow it can change that textual fact. As she put it in the opinion, we cannot accept the government's proposal to limit those words because the statute says something markedly different. And she noted that although there is a canon of construction that if possible, you should interpret a statute to make it constitutional if such an interpretation is reasonable, she says we cannot rewrite a law to conform it to constitutional requirements. And she found that to limit it to just profanity would not be to just interpret the law, but it would really be to rewrite it. And so once again, the court found that taking those words on their face, just like the disparagement clause that was struck down in McCall versus Tam, the both immoral and scandalous are viewpoint-based distinctions. And interestingly, once again, no part of the majority came to a conclusion as to exactly how to justify where trademark registration fits in our First Amendment universe. Is it a subsidy? Is it government? Is it a limited public forum that the government has set up, like a school? They said, once again, we're not going to touch that question. And in fact, the six-justice majority contained justices from both of the two four-justice pluralities in Tam, and it had one parenthetical in the majority opinion in Brunetti that simply says, in particular, no majority emerged to resolve whether a Lanham Act bar is a condition on a government benefit or a simple restriction on speech. Now, there were one concurring opinion by Justice Alito and then several that concurred in part and dissented in part. Justice Alito's was essentially to stress that he found if the act were rewritten and repassed to apply only to profanity, that such a law would easily pass muster. And in fact, he took the opportunity to say that profanity plays no real part in the expression of ideas. And as commonly used today, he, quote, generally signifies nothing except emotion in a severely limited vocabulary. Now, three justices, Roberts, Breyer, and Sotomayor, each wrote separately, but they all essentially came to the same conclusion, which is they found that a line should be drawn between the words immoral and the word scandalous. And they all found that while immoral has to be interpreted as viewpoint-based, they found that scandalous does not. And in fact, that scandalous could be reasonably interpreted to only refer to mode of expression, and thus that scandalous could be interpreted as viewpoint neutral, as essentially only applying to profanity as the government wanted. And so the reason that they were classified as concurring in part is that they concurred in striking down the immoral word, but would have kept in effect the scandalous part. And they had a few textual, besides simply the canon of constitutionality, I think the strongest argument Justice Sotomayor had was the canon against surplusage, which is that in general you don't read statutes as simply being unnecessarily verbose, using two words when one will do. And so if you want to assume that immoral and scandalous are both doing work in the statute, then she said it made sense to think that immoral referred to expressions of unpopular views, whereas scandalous referred to modes of expression that were in poor taste. Now, Justice Breyer had an interesting partial concurrence, partial dissent, where he essentially once again laid out that he thinks about First Amendment cases in a way that's different from really any of the other justices. He rejects a lot of the more formalistic means that the Supreme Court has taken on First Amendment cases. He says snarkily that the First Amendment is not the tax code, and he takes a much more sort of fluid balancing approach. And he said he would simply look at what are the speech harms of a particular act and weigh those against what are the compelling benefits of it. And in this case, he finds that if it is narrowly interpreted as only banning registration of profanity, then that would be enough. He cites some scientific studies that find that reactions to profanity can actually have a physiological difference in the listeners, that as he even says that skin conducting electricity has been measured to be higher in people when they hear profanity. And he has some citations to Supreme Court cases about so-called fighting words or incitements to violence, which are classic exceptions to the First Amendment, and says perhaps profanity borders on those, at least in extreme cases. So I think the main takeaway from this case, if people want to take a lesson from it, it's that really everyone, and I'll include myself in this category, sort of forgot to go back to first principles of textualism and statutory interpretation and really unnecessarily fought on the PTO's turf and made this case harder for Brunetti than it had to be. We should not so easily pass over striking out certain words from people's vocabulary as if it doesn't restrict their speech. It's kind of like conducting an orchestra with one hand tied behind your back. Even though we have lots of so-called synonyms in English, there's still a difference between words like educate and teach, and there's still often a right word to use and a wrong word in a given scenario, and we shouldn't assume that people can communicate just as well by striking out a few words from their vocabulary. So the ground we fought on, again, was assuming that this was going to be a case about profanity. But in the end, it turned out not to be a case about profanity. It turned out to be a case about two pretty clear and explicit words that had simply, over the course of 100 years of convoluted Federal Circuit opinions, lost their plain meanings that we should have seen the whole time if we'd just gone back and looked at them afresh.
Thank you for listening to this episode of SCOTUSCast. SCOTUSCast is a project of the Federalist Society, a not-for-profit educational organization of conservative and libertarian law students, law professors, and lawyers, founded upon the principles that the state exists to preserve freedom, that the separation of governmental powers is central to our Constitution, and that it is emphatically the province and duty of the judiciary to say what the law is, not what it should be. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast series, including SCOTUSCast and Practice Group Podcasts, on iTunes or Google Play. For an archive of past podcasts, as well as audio and video of past Federalist Society events, please visit our website at fedsoc.org/multimedia. That's fedsoc.org/multimedia.
This has been a FedSoc audio production.